Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for words and their stories and people in America. Coming up after As It Is.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. In the second part of today's show, we will hear about growing feelings against foreigners in Turkey.
But first, we hear about American politics. Republican Party members were pleased with the results of the midterm congressional elections. That has the party talking about the 2016 presidential campaign. Bob Doty brings us more.
Whit Ayers works as a strategist for the Republican Party. He says Republican victories in Congress may prepare the party for winning back the presidency 2 years from now. Many well-known Republicans could decide to seek the party's presidential nomination. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush is often mentioned as a possible nominee. So are New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and Texas Senator Ted Cruz. But Mr. Ayers says nobody is a clear choice to be the Republican nominee.
Whoever wins it will demonstrate an ability to join Tea Party, Libertarian, Establishment, Social Conservative, and Internationalist Republicans all in one coalition and get enough of each of those groups to build a majority.
For the Democrats, preparation for the 2016 elections offers a different challenge. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is the clear leader for the Democratic presidential nomination, if she wants it. But Democratic strategist Celinda Lake says the party needs to find a winning economic message.
I think a lot of people are now concluding, rightly or wrongly, that while Obama was changed, that he didn't have as much experience as we needed to actually get things done. Nobody questions Secretary Clinton's qualifications and experience.
Political observers say that for Hillary Clinton to succeed, she must show that she differs with President Barack Obama on some issues. The recent election results showed him to be unpopular among voters. Political analyst John Fortier says Ms. Clinton may be the favorite for the Democratic presidential nomination, but she will face some opposition for the position. Mr. Fortier says it will be difficult to defeat her. He says other Democrats surely will challenge her. And he says they probably will try to make the argument from the left, the more liberal side of the party. He also says she may be criticized for being too hawkish about foreign policy. But Mr. Ayers says Democrats may not understand how hard Mr. Obama's unpopularity will make it to win the presidency again.
I will tell you that it is exceedingly difficult for one party to win three presidential elections in a row. History suggests that it is a very unusual event.
The last time a party won three presidential elections, one after another, was in 1988. At that time, then Vice President George H.W. Bush was elected after Ronald Reagan's two terms in office. I'm Bob Doty.
I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. And you are listening to As It Is.
A recent survey of public opinion in Turkey finds that xenophobia, a fear of foreigners, is on the rise. We go back to Bob Doty for more.
Semi Ediz writes about diplomacy for the Turkish newspaper Taraf and Al Monitor website. He says feelings against foreigners are not limited to Western countries, as traditionally they were.
This is almost universal. I mean, 70% of those surveyed said they were anti-American, but an equal 70% said they were anti-Russian. And then we find that most Turks are against Saudi Arabia and China. They're against NATO. You know, they're against the EU. So there is this kind of national deformation that, you know, everybody hates us.
The apparent change of attitude is happening at a time when Turkey has tense or no diplomatic relations with three of its neighbors. They are Syria, Iraq, and Iran. Cengiz Aktar is a political scientist with Süleyman Şah University in Istanbul. He says differences with Western allies over the conflict in Syria and the struggle against the Islamic State have added to Turkish feelings of isolation.
The government is pumping this idea of splendid isolation, which they call worthy loneliness. A bit like Russia, by the way. Turkey is isolating itself, is still trying to making its case, but of course with no avail.
Observers say suspicion and even hostility to the world are nothing new for Turkey. For much of the 20th century, Turkish school children were taught that enemies surrounded their country. Children also learned that Western countries working with Arabs caused the collapse of the Ottoman Empire. Political scientist Cengiz Aktar says those conditions and the European occupation of Turkey after World War I still shape the way Turks think. Mr. Ediz says that means Turkish politicians will seek to use public fears and increased nationalism to win support in general elections. The voting is to take place by June of next year. He said, there is a feeling that Turkish leaders are guarding the country against plans by hostile outsiders.
It is a fact that politicians in Turkey also use this to their advantage, you see. There is this perception that they are guarding Turkey against nefarious outside plans. Erdogan himself was reviving imagery pertaining to the First World War. So as you see, we have this being utilized at the highest level of the polity in Turkey.
Last month, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said Western interference in the area was like Lawrence of Arabia, the famous World War I British Army officer. This man led an Arab rebellion against the Ottoman Empire. I'm Bob Doty.
I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. We recently received our supply of VOA wall calendars for 2015. This year, the calendars have beautiful color pictures of the southwestern United States. To get your calendar, simply send an email to us at learningenglish@voanews.com or write to VOA Learning English, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA.
Be sure to include your mailing address when you write. And tell us what radio station you are listening to and the time of the broadcast. And join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
And And now, another edition of Words and Their Stories, a VOA Learning English program about American expressions. Thanksgiving is one of the biggest American holidays, and Thanksgiving dinner is the center of the holiday.
And at the center of Thanksgiving dinner is the turkey.
Our listeners may be wondering why the word turkey describes both a country and a bird that Americans eat for Thanksgiving dinner.
Many think the bird comes from the nation of Turkey. But turkey is not from Turkey. In fact, the fact that the turkey bird is called by that name is one big mistake.
We could say it is a case of mistaken identity. Since Americans are celebrating Thanksgiving, it is time to set the record straight.
First of all, Turkey has meant the land of the Turks since ancient times. The word turkey, referring to the bird, first appears in the English language around 1540. And the misunderstanding over the word turkey happened because of birds that look similar.
This is the case of mistaken identity that we spoke of before. First, there is an African bird called the guinea fowl. It has dark feathers with white spots and a patch of brown on the back of its neck. Portuguese traders brought the guinea fowl to Europe through North Africa.
This foreign bird came to Europe through Turkish lands. So, the English thought of the bird as a Turkish chicken. They mistakenly called the male bird the turkey cock. They called the female bird the turkey hen. It became popular to eat the bird for Christmas dinner. When the Europeans moved to North America, they saw a bird that looked like the guinea fowl. Orrin Hargraves is a lexicographer, someone who writes dictionaries. Mr. Hargraves explains what happened.
Some Europeans saw an American turkey, thought that it was the guinea fowl, which at that time was called the turkey cock, and so gave it the same name.
And so now we call this North American bird turkey, even though it has no connection at all with the country Turkey, or even with Europe for that matter. Now we call that bird turkey because somebody misnamed it. They thought it looked like the bird of African origin, a bird that came first from Africa.
And there is another piece to the puzzle. The case of mistaken identity crosses land and language borders.
The Turkish, for their part, call the North American bird Hindi, the Turkish name for India. The reference to India probably comes from the old wrong idea that the New World was in Eastern Asia.
Sometimes that is how language changes over time. By mistakes.
Another interesting fact about the turkey is that it almost became the national bird of the United States. Some people thought it should be the symbol of the U.S.
But today, of course, you will see the bald eagle on the presidential seal of the United States. Founding Father Benjamin Franklin did not think the eagle was a good symbol for the new country. He thought the eagle was lazy and of bad moral character because it stole food from other birds. He thought that the turkey was a more respectable bird and a true original native of America.
And that's it for this episode of Words and Their Stories. Join us again next week when we explore the story behind American English.
in America, a program in special English on the Voice of America. Today, we tell about one of the most successful writers of children's books. Sarah Long and Steve Ember tell about Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss was the name used by Theodore Seuss Geisel. He was famous because of the books he wrote for children. They combine humorous words, funny pictures, and social opinion. Mr. Geisel also illustrated his books with pictures of funny creatures and plants. He did not receive training in art, yet he created the pictures for most of his books. The Dr. Seuss books are very popular with young readers. They enjoy the invented words, and they like to look at the pictures of unusual creatures, such as the Cat in the Hat, Thing One, Thing Two, Little Cindy Lou Who, and Sam I Am.
Theodore Geisel was born in Springfield, Massachusetts, in 1904. He graduated from Dartmouth College in 1925. He spent a year studying literature at Oxford University in England. Mr. Geisel returned to the United States in 1927. He hoped to become a writer of serious literature. During this time, the United States was in an economic decline known as the Great Depression. This forced Mr. Geisel to delay his dreams of becoming a serious writer. He found work as a creator of advertising campaigns designed to sell products. He also drew cartoons for popular magazines, including Life and Vanity Fair. Cartoons are humorous pictures with words.
Dr. Seuss wrote his first book for children in 1937. It is called, And to Think I Saw It on Mulberry Street. A number of publishers rejected it. They said it was too different. A friend finally published it. Soon, other successful books followed. Over the years, he wrote more than 40 children's books. They were fun to read, yet his books sometimes dealt with serious subjects, including equality, responsibility, and protecting the environment. By the middle 1950s, Dr. Seuss had become one of the best-loved and most successful children's book writers in the world. He had a strong desire to help children. In 1954, Life magazine published a report about school children who could not read. The report said many children's books were not interesting. Dr. Seuss decided to write books that were interesting and easy to read. He used rhyming words, words with the same ending sound, like fish and wish. In the book Hop on Pop, he presented two words. Then he used them in simple sentences like this. Day, play, we play all day. Night, fight, we fight all night.
In 1957, Dr. Seuss wrote The Cat in the Hat. He used less than 225 words to write the book. This was an estimate of the number of words a six-year-old should be able to read. The story is about a cat who tries to entertain two children on a rainy day while their mother is away from home. The cat is not like normal cats. It is more like a human. It walks on two legs instead of four. It wears a tall red and white hat. A big red bow is around its neck. And it talks. As the cat entertains the children, it creates complete disorder in the house. The book was an immediate success. It was a fun story and easy to read. Children loved it. Their parents loved it too. Today, many adults say it is still one of the stories they like best. Listen as Ray Freeman reads from The Cat in the Hat.
The sun did not shine. It was too wet to play. So we sat in the house all that cold, cold, wet day. I sat there with Sally. We sat there, we two, and I said, "How I wish we had something to do." Too wet to go out, and too cold to play ball. So we sat in the house. We did nothing at all. So all we could do was to sit, 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 sit. And we did not like it, not one little bit. And then something went bump. How that bump made us jump. We looked. Then we saw him step in on the mat. We looked, and we saw him, the Cat in the Hat. And he said to us, "Why do you sit there like that? I know it is wet, and the sun is not sunny. But we can have lots of good fun that is funny."
Dr. Seuss was very concerned that some children were not learning to read. The success of The Cat in the Hat made him want to write more books for children. He started a series called Beginner Books. Beginner books remain well-liked among children today. The series includes such titles as Yertle the Turtle and Other Stories, Fox in Socks, and The Lorax. In 1960, Dr. Seuss was urged by a book publisher to write a book using less than 50 words, and he did. The book is called Green Eggs and Ham. It is one of Dr. Seuss's most popular books. In the book, a creature named Sam I Am tries to get another creature to eat an unusual meal, green eggs and ham. Here is part of the story read by Miko Prescott.
"Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam I Am. I do not like green eggs and ham. Would you like them here or there?" "I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I Am."
In 1960, Dr. Seuss wrote the story How the Grinch Stole Christmas. It is about an extremely unkind man called the Grinch. He tries to stop Christmas from arriving in a village called Whoville. He steals all the Christmas gifts and food in the village while everyone is sleeping. Yet Christmas comes anyway. The people of Whoville are happy, although they have no gifts. By the end of the story, the Grinch becomes a kind person. In this story, Dr. Seuss gives the message that Christmas is about more than receiving gifts. How the Grinch Stole Christmas was later produced for television. It first was shown in 1966. It continues to be a very popular holiday program. Here is a song from How the Grinch Stole Christmas. It is called You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch, you really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus, you're as charming as an eel. Mr. Grinch, you're a bad banana with a greasy black peel. You're a monster, Mr. Grinch. Your heart's an empty hole. Your brain is full of spiders. You've got garlic in your soul, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39 and a half foot pole. You're a vile one, Mr. Grinch.
In 1984, Mr. Geisel won a Pulitzer Prize for children's literature. At that time, he had been writing children's books for almost 50 years. He was honored for the education and enjoyment his books provided American children and their parents. In 1986, Dr. Seuss wrote You're Only Old Once. It was his first book written for adults. It talks about getting old. His last book was written in 1990. It was called Oh, the Places You'll Go.
Theodore Seuss Geisel died in 1991. He was 87 years old. Dr. Seuss's influence remains through the books he wrote and illustrated. Millions of copies of them have been sold worldwide. Experts say his books helped change the way American children learn to read. Yet his books are loved by people of all ages. Dr. Seuss once said, "I do not write for children. I write for people." People continue to honor Dr. Seuss. Theodore Seuss Geisel was born on March 2nd. Each year on that day, the National Education Association calls for every child and every community in America to celebrate reading. This program is called Read Across America.
This special English program was written by LaJuan Davis. It was produced by Paul Thompson. Your announcers were Sarah Long and Steve Ember. I'm Mary Tillotson. Join us again next week for another People in America program on the Voice of America.